So, translation. The sun illuminates both internally and externally by expanding its radiation. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by expanding his universal form, maintains everything in the creation, both internally and externally. Okay, so the sun illuminates internally and externally. And my computer is doing something also. What's it thinking about? Okay, probably updating. Okay. Okay. And then to kind of summarize here in just a chaotic fashion, the previous, because this verse is in context, of course. Otherwise, the general context is that Lord Brahma is explaining what is the situation, who are we, you know, what is the purpose of life, all these things to Narada Muni. And he's an engineer, so he's explaining how the universe is created, everything else. This chapter is called Purusha Shukta Confirmed. And the Purusha Shukta, right, it starts off with Sahasra Shirsha, Sahasrapat, Sahasraksha. The Purusha has thousands of hands, thousands of eyes, thousands of legs. Yeah? So here, Lord Brahma is giving the same point, that behind everything is not an impersonal, homogeneous Brahman effulgence, but is the Pumam. So the previous verses say, although he is transcendental to all of them, all these different manifestations, eternally existing in a form not exceeding 9 inches, which of course is the distance from your, I guess, your ring finger to the end of your thumb. What is it called? 1 cubit or something? Yeah? Yeah? As the sun illuminates both internally and externally, so it's giving a nice analogy to try and understand this. You know, even that's a little difficult. How can a supreme person be all pervasive? And he's also 9 inches too. Yeah. Similarly, by expanding his universal form, the verses say, he's maintaining everything, everything internally and externally. In our graphic, if you can see it, we looked over here for a clip art of a flower root. And we see, here's the little tulip on top with its leaves and the earth. And down below, we don't see it internally, you might say, is the root. Okay. And then the next verse, number 19, it says, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is to be known as the supreme reservoir of all material opulences by the 1/4 of his energy in which all the living entities exist. Deathlessness, fearlessness, and freedom from the anxieties of old age and disease exist in the kingdom of God, which is beyond the 3 higher planetary systems and beyond the material coverings. Yeah. So the Bhagavatam, again, it starts off kind of like an Upanishad, talking about things in this very kind of like, in some ways impersonal, Adhoksaja, Achyuta. These are usually names we see given for the Supreme Lord. And here, how is Vaikuntha described? There's no eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. There's no birth, death, disease, and old age there. And so it's not giving a positive description of rasas so much, but it's very nice, you know, at least to know that, because probably everybody here, including myself, we do have some anxiety about being eaten by somebody intellectually or physically or socially or somebody, you know. I mean, my disciples are complaining about their social problems in ISKCON, their temple. And I tell them it's no different whatsoever. I'm afraid of being eaten by different GBC people and banned from this zone or something. Oh, my goodness, you know. So probably the same thing goes on in Goloka, but there it's more cheerful, you know. It's fun. So this chapter, the previous chapter, where Brahma is describing this Virat Rup, how Krishna's controlling everything. And he's giving a very nice explanation. You know, usually we have our gross world and we have science which deals with atoms and molecules. But the Virat Rup conception is pantheism. It's ecology. And science didn't like that in the beginning, but I guess it was the 1960s it started to come in and it's accepted then as a practical way of looking at reality. So somehow or other, maybe because of Lord Chaitanya, ecology got accepted as the same thing for a scientist to talk about. That heads towards the same process of understanding nature. You know? So then the Virat Rup thing will kind of finish off with the sunshine example here. And even in the purport today, Prabhupada will foreshadow the verse 18, which starts talking about the 1/4 energy and the three quarters energy in the spiritual world. And that will go on for several verses talking about this perspective. Then, in verse 23, Lord Brahma will say, When I was born, I had no ingredients for sacrificial performances. And so then he explains where those sacrificial ingredients came from, how they work, because that's how we manipulate the energy. Lord Brahma is explaining how it all is created, how it's controlled by demigods. Yeah? But then in text 23, he'll start talking about how living entities then manipulate it for their welfare, for their increasingly higher and more subtle aspirations, culminating in pure devotional service to the Lord. But where are the ingredients? Where do they come from for offering sacrifice? So it's kind of a perspective. And right now, Lord Brahma is kind of taking it from the gross creation to a strong perspective of the secondary of the Vaikuntha. And today he's giving a very nice example. So the purport Prabhupada says, the universal form of the Lord, the universal form of the Lord, or the impersonal feature of the Lord, known as the Brahma Jyoti, is clearly explained here. So for me, this is quite a realization. Prabhupada is calling, he says, that the Brahma Jyoti is known as the Brahma Jyoti. Which way is it? The universal form of the Lord, the impersonal feature of the Lord, known as, yeah. So he's saying that the universal form is the Brahma Jyoti. Yeah. And we always think of all these little corpuscles of uniform jiva or light, you know, flowing everywhere. But what are each of those little particles? Each of those little particles has a different name. You know, Bob, Fred, Jack, Mary, Susie, whatever. So if you really look at it, for me, that the universal form is being presented here as the Brahma Jyoti. So if we're in that level, you know, where maybe we're not dividing things up into so much into a American corn, you know, Russian corn, Mexican side of the river, an American side of the river, you know, and we're starting to give that up. We start to see this universal aspect of reality, you know, then we're in the Brahma Jyoti. Wow. So all the people I see, all the things I do, this is all still impersonal. And we can begin to appreciate this whole world we see and deal with. The Second World War was completely impersonal. The First World War, Alexander's conquests of India, they were all impersonal. Everything is impersonal. There is no Alexander, the person Alexander. My goodness. Yeah. And so then we have to penetrate through that. Yeah? And what does it say? The universal form of the Lord. My God, I lost control. The universal form of the Lord, or the impersonal feature of the Lord, yeah, known as the Brahma Jyoti, is clearly explained here and compared to the radiation of the sun. The sunshine may expand all over the universe, but the source of the sunshine, namely the sun planet, or the deity known as Surya Narayan, is the basis of such radiation. Of course, we're radiating heat. You know, you put your hand close to someone's body, you haven't got to touch it. There'll always be heat being radiated, infrared. Probably all, each of us is radiating infrared radiation. And, of course, we're also radiating vapor, you know, through the pores of our skin. And with that, probably also, we're also radiating, you know, fragrance. But Surya is radiating in the other spectrum like that. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, is the basis of the impersonal Brahma Jyoti radiation, or the impersonal feature of the Lord. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 14:27. Brahmano hi pratistaham. So, the universal form of the Lord is the secondary imagination of the impersonal form of the Lord. But the primary form of the Lord is Shyama Sundar. So the grammar here, a little complicated for me. So the universal form of the Lord is the secondary imagination. So does that mean that there's also a primary imagination? Well, you can look at it that way also. I also look at it as a secondary imagination, an imagination being secondary, of the impersonal form of the Lord. Like that, yeah? But the primary form is the Lord is Shyamasundar. But actually, yeah, after Shyamasundar, of course, there's so many expansions. Prakash, yeah? From Balaram to Sankarshan, on down to Mahavishnu. Yeah? And how's it go now? Vasudeva remains Vasudeva. Shankarshan becomes Mahavishnu. Pradyumna becomes Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. And Aniruddha becomes Shridakshaya Vishnu. For a long time I was wondering about that since in the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Yeah? Yeah. So these are expanding, and then the Virat Rup is coming from. Where is it coming from? We're getting this information filled in now. So it appears to be coming maybe more from Garbhadakshaya Vishnu to some degree. You know? And then Shridakshaya Vishnu is the form that kind of fills it in like that. You know? So very subtle, different levels of realization. Because to our comprehension, reading this, it'll appear again in the third canto with Kapila. Actually, it'll appear in the third canto with Maitreya discussing with Vidura. Several chapters. And then Kapila will explain it again in detail. And then in the fourth canto, what is the fourth? Fourth canto is DDPP. Daksha, Dhruva, Prithu, Pracheta. DDPP. So in Dhruva, there's no description so much. In Prithu, not so much. And in Daksha, not so much. And the Prachetas, maybe a little bit, you know. So pretty much by the third canto is finished. But it appears again and again, but very similar, but from different angles. So you really begin to catch on to how it's all working. And of course, you can apply this to cooking. You can apply this to Gandharva Veda, music and dance. You can apply it to Vastu Veda, architecture, residence, accommodation. You can apply it to Danda Veda, political science. You can apply it to Ayurveda, you know, science of longevity. Yeah? And all these cases, what we're studying now is, you know, it's physics 101. But then later on, it'll be applied specifically, for example, our Veda is Gandharva Veda. You know, we're following Gandharva Veda, realizing the truth through singing and dancing, mostly. But also Jnana Yoga, also combined some. But primarily the singing and dancing. And so as you begin to understand the hierarchy of the elements, Prabhupada says that the first result of a good kirtan is a desire to dance. So first there's sound, and when the sound is proper and penetrating, then the prana starts to move, the air starts to move. You know? That happens, you can start to see, experience, you know, colors like that, fire. Yeah? And so it expands out like that, the kirtan. Yeah? So the universal form of the Lord is a secondary imagination of the primary form of the Lord. But the primary form of the Lord is Shyamasundar, with two hands playing on his eternal flute. And so we looked up a couple of pictures of flute on the internet. I like flute. I have a flute. I've been playing it since I was a child. And if you can see our graphics here, we have a nice flute of some little Chinese fellow with his sika in the front, with a little brahmachari. And a straw hat on the back of a water buffalo, headed off north. And it's so natural, you know. It's so nice that this is such a sweet, you know, sweet little kid, and it could be Krishna. And of course, the buffalo is probably very, very happy to be clumping along, heading home for dinner with some nice road music. And what do you need? All the paraphernalia, everything else is coming from nature. The hat. Second picture we found was also Chinese, since I think I'm Chinese. And here's a little some country boy, with short pants and a, you know, kind of a cloth over his shoulder, tossed over his shoulder, again with his straw hat, playing his flute. And you can see this is what Krishna was like. Can you imagine that this is the king of the world? This is the prince of the Yadu dynasty. This is, you know, God. But just a little country fellow, sitting there on the ground, getting his pants dirty, and playing his flute, but resonating with the the Virat Roop, and resonating with all the natural features and going deeper and deeper, and the music being transferred all over the great mystical forest of Vrindavan, and reaching the village of Vrindavan and reaching different people in different ways. Yeah. So this is the original form, Krishna playing on his flute. Then it goes on to say, and now we get into the percentage thing for the first time, which the next couple of verses will follow. 75% of the expansive radiation of the Lord is manifested in the spiritual sky, tripad, vibhuti. And 25% of his personal radiation comprehends the entire expansion of the material universes. Yeah. This is also explained and stated in the Bhagavad Gita 10:42. Thus, the 75% expansion of his radiation is called his internal energy. And of course, in the word by word, there was Bahir. Whereas the 25% of expansion is called the external energy, which was that's Bahir. The external is Bahir, and Antara is internal. So three quarters. Yeah. So this, of course, when I first was reading Prabhupada's books in Sacramento before I was initiated, and it says in the Nectar of Devotion, the jiva can have 78% of the qualities of the Supreme Lord. And I couldn't figure that out, because God is unlimited, so how can we have 78%? You know? So finally I understood that what it means is that out of 64 principal qualities, we can manifest 50 in a small percentage. Like, we can be an expert judge of time and place, we can be expert judges, we can be very kind to old people. Yeah? And so 50 is 78% of 64. So here it's saying that the external energy is one quarter of Krishna's expansive radiation. But what does that mean? Because every single Vaikuntha planet is bigger than all the universes combined. Every single one of them. Yeah? So I haven't found the answer. Maybe at the end of the class somebody knows it like that. I finally found out why Lord Shiva has the moon in his head. Finally. So many little adventures. So here's the Bhagavad Gita 10:42 that Prabhupada was citing. But what need is there, Arjuna, for all this detailed knowledge? With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire universe. As a go, ekanksena stito jagat. Eka anksa, ekanksena stito jagat. Yeah. This is after Krishna shows the vibhuti mat sattva, the universal form, and all the different manifestations. Among animals, I am the lion. Among mountains, I am the Himalaya. Yeah. Like that. Yeah. Looking for some alternative to going back to Godhead, following Madan Mohan's descriptions of reformation, proof Maya. As soon as I go to these on the YouTube, I go to these like universal form things, and so I looked up the Himalayas on the YouTube. And then there's one movie it made a long time ago about the actual team that went there and the whole history. And it does have, like, you know, a potent, uplifting thing. And you begin to realize, you know, I think it's 35,000 feet or something. That's how high these airplanes are flying. And it's the oxygen and everything else like that. And when you're standing, I guess the two of them got up there, and Hillary and the other fellow. And when you're standing there, and I guess the very tip was maybe like about, you know, the size of a piece of plywood or something, you know. And so you stand on the tip of the tip, maybe, then you look around and you realize that everything in the world is below you, like that. So it makes you think about things. So, but then Krishna is saying, yeah, you think about these things. You become enlivened. You become ecstatic, you know, thinking about these manifestations. And do that, and then think about how with a fragment, an angsa of myself, I pervade and maintain everything. Then Prabhupada says, the living entities who are residents of the spiritual as well as the material expansions are his marginal energy, tatashta shakti, and they are at liberty to live in either of the energies, external or internal. Yeah. Those who, and it says liberty. Those who live within the spiritual expansion of the Lord are called liberated souls, whereas the residents of the external expansion are called the conditioned souls. So as far as I know, this word tatasta actually means shoreline. So for our graphic here, we looked up the shore, we got a nice background graphic. And we can see there's a piece of land that sometimes is underwater, like the rest of the ocean floor, and sometimes is dry, like the land. And so that's us. You can't say it's day or night. You can't say it's, you know, ocean or land. It's the beach, like that area, like that, you know, the shoreline, and many interesting songs based upon this. Yeah. So we're free to live in either one. But of course, the more we go out into the ocean, the more we're in an unnatural situation. At every moment, you know, we have to struggle. And the more we're on the land, it's so simple. We're here. On the airplane, there was this one movie. I think it won all kinds of awards. It was very simple about, I guess, like 2035 or something. And some science crew is trying to put up some telescope or something, radio telescope. And then the Russians, of course, they blow up one space station, and all the pieces come flying around, and all of her fellow astronauts, the scientist lady, get killed, and one guy who's an old like mentor guy, he kind of comes back in dreams and stuff. And it's very, very nice, it's very simple, very beautiful graphics and stuff like that, being out in space, and she's trying to survive, and this happens, that happens, and this happens, and that happens. And it shows bhakti, it shows determination, it shows intelligence, it shows enthusiasm. It's a very simple thing. There's no gross activity, no drinking, smoking, anything in it. Just basically just her confrontation with the Bharat Rup. And so finally, after the whole thing, she somehow or other gets to the Chinese space station, gets the thing open, uses a fire extinguisher to launch the thing. And the thing lands and crashes, and almost, she almost drowns. They're saying, "Who are you? Please, you know, report." So she lands someplace, and it looks like Siberia. And finally gets out of it and swims on land. And she's on the land. I think she grabs a hold of it, like, and maybe she's lost in the middle of the jungle or the forest. But the whole thing, you have this sensation that, my God, it just doesn't matter where you're on the land. On the land, it's okay. You got a chance. It's your home. You know. So it has a very nice, you know, nice movie, you know, in terms of inspiring these things. But this is our situation. When we're in the external energy, we're always struggling. But when the internal energy, we can just sit down and do nothing, because it's part of our nature. So really, we can live in both, but actually our real nature is to belong to the Antaranga Shakti. So in the daytime, you have to hide yourself from the sun. The natural situation is to be surrounded by ecstatic stimulation for loving Krishna in your own way, for contributing your own service. The Prabhupada finishes by saying, we can just make an estimate of the number of the residents of the internal expansions in comparison with the number of residents in the external energy, and may easily conclude that the liberated souls are far more numerous than the conditioned souls. So we went to the clip art thing here and put an angel. We got back a lot of nice little angels here. On the other side, we got a resident of the external energy. I guess his name is Bruno. He weighs about something probably like about 600 pounds and likes to eat raw fish, raw living fish, like that. And can't take his coat off in the winter. Probably has fleas and everything else and worms in his excrement. Yeah. So far more angels than bears, like that. So this is kind of our little summary of the purport here. And my only contribution is that going on this again and again, thinking about it, chanting it, talking about it with nice devotees, and you gradually, even with scientists, you know, you gradually start to really appreciate how it's just a fact. Anything you look at, you can trace its life back to the sun. Even the elements, they say the elements which make up the planets are supposed to have come from the sun, like that. You know? Of course, there's another thing when you actually, when they show you in these science things, the size of the sun compared to, you know, the size of the Earth, it's even a good example. It's like a football field, you know, compared to a grain of sand. You know, the sun is so much bigger, you know, than the Earth. You know? And of course, all the energy we're taking is one thread-like little ray of light, you know, can maintain all this energy on the Earth. Another one maintains Mars, another one maintains Venus. And of course, with different distances from the same source, they have different light. Venus is closer, so there, oil is, water is probably a vapor, salt water is probably a vapor, and oil may be liquid. So does that give us an ocean of ghee? On the other side, Mars is farther away, so there, what is it? What's vapor? Clouds, you know, because salt water takes a little bit higher temperature. So the fresh water there also becomes solid probably on Mars, but then probably the alcohol becomes a liquid, which here it immediately evaporates. You know? So considering that, is that how we get an ocean of alcohol? You know? So that's my speculation, each of these oceans, and I think the distances will match up. We discover is describing the different things that are manifest there in different liquid forms. So another nice thing is to calculate the surface area of the Earth. I think what it is, if you just have a flat disk, you know, that's what's catching all the energy of the sun, is that as if the Earth was a little round circle, flat circle. And then imagine a sphere around the sun, the same distance as the Earth. Okay. Now, what is the surface area of that sphere, that big sphere? Of course, compared to the Earth at 93 million miles away, it must be, I forgot what it is, it's like a million or something like that, you know? So the sun, by its energy, could maintain 10 times as many Earths, 100 times as many Earths, 1,000 times as many Earths, 1,000 times 1,000, yeah, many Earths. So we begin to understand how powerful is the sun. And because they're different distances, they're different natures, they would each manifest that in a different way. But the source of energy of all of them, you know, would be the sun. You know? So this is how we begin to appreciate the Virat Roop. And the thing is, too, we appreciate the Virat Roop is personal. Every single thing about this is personal. So even the Brahma Jyoti, which is behind it, or it is apparently, this definition, is also full of personal variety. You know? It may even be that the Jiva souls, who are each individual in the Brahma Jyoti, may even be hanging out in a kind of an unconscious sense in kind of different conglomerates. You know, when you get into the Brahma Jyoti, that there are waves and eddies and whirlpools within there of different kinds of jivas. You know? So any kind of, I have a little more to present about the temple opening in Houston, but any kind of questions or comments at this point?
Okay, Maharaj, if you could give me a moment. All right, now I've unmuted everybody. Does anyone have anything they'd like to add? Maharaj, I have a question, if nobody else does. And that, I'm still duller than I am, confused about the Brahma Jyoti. Uh-oh, but I got a call coming in. I'll see if anyone else has a question.
Maharaj, I just wanted to thank you for such a great class. And I really appreciate the way you describe the slides. Because I don't have a screen, I just connect by phone. And I can see, I visualize the slides as you described them, and so I really appreciate that. And then there was something you mentioned in passing when you were talking about dividing the infinite, like 75% of infinite and 25% of infinite. I've always wondered about that also, but just while you were talking about that, you said in passing you finally figured out or learned or heard why Lord Shiva has a moon on his head, and you didn't enlighten us. So I was wondering if you had a minute, if you could go ahead and tell us that, even though it's not part of the classroom.
I was dangling my worm here to see if I get a bite. Yeah, because I always wondered about that. So Sri Haridas from Boise, he told me that it's mentioned, I think it's in the Vishnu Puran. And of course, there's a Vishnu Puran movie like that, you know. It's pretty good. It has a big story about Dhruva and stuff, and we accept it. What is it? Something like Chandra, you know, married somebody's daughter, okay, and then didn't treat her properly or something like that. And so then her father was out to get him, you know, going to chastise him and cut his head off or something, you know. So Chandra ran and then took shelter in Lord Shiva's took shelter with Lord Shiva. And then Lord Shiva said, okay, I'll protect you. And he put him on his head, you know. And so now then the father-in-law, you know, couldn't go after, you know, go beating on Lord Shiva's head and all that kind of stuff. So he was protected. Okay, let's go on here. Because actually, I'm just coming back. I'm caught up and I have a lot of service here, more than an old man should have. So we just came back from the grand opening festival of ISKCON Houston. I got the poster here. It says, ISKCON Houston's grand opening festival, 1320 34th Street, Houston, Texas, May 17th through 18th, 2014. And the poster is taken from the Garunga Hall, which is across the big, beautiful, not even a garden, it's a park almost. And it shows the temple on the opposite side when it was still in construction. There's big domes on the left and right, blue and tan, and then a kind of a thing in the middle, I wish you call it, not actually a dome, but it's a like a pyramid, and a big dome in the back, like that, you know. And originally went about, it was 13 sannyasis there, 3,000 people fed, and you know, they got sort of outside stage. So they, and then they, all these devotees came, like Kalakanta came from Florida, and he was describing how they were in Texas, he was the president, maybe like 11 devotees, and they're looking for a permanent place. And they had a house near the university, was an option. Another one was a like a place that could be a cultural center and a restaurant, and one of the most like progressive cultural center area, you know, shopping places in Texas, in Houston. And the third one was actually where they settled on, which was out in the suburban area, and had like auto body repair shops and, you know, furniture places, and you know, kind of lower income, lower middle income. And Tamal Krishnamar chose that, you know. And they couldn't exactly understand why he wanted it, you know. But they could see he had this long-range, sophisticated vision. So because it's where it is, the devotees have been able to buy these other properties, old trailer courts, you know, and that kind of stuff. So now they'll buy one of these properties there, and the properties can be like, they're big enough to put in a little lane and three houses on both sides, two-story houses. And one of them is Radha Lane, another is Goswami Lane. And then the devotees there are contractors and architects. So you can buy like a piece of property. Kriti Kapoor, he's like an aspirant for initiation. He's just finishing off his degree as a psychiatrist. And his wife's about 2 years behind him. They have a little baby now, like about 14 months old. And so Nitai Gaurasundar's psychiatrist too. And they both kind of joke that a psychiatrist means a legal drug dealer, what it comes down to. You just legally can prescribe the drugs that make people feel good or whatever, you know. So anyway, he's about legal. So seeing this whole thing, and I'm working with the educational program there, because they're just about ready to open the first real solid, you know, primary school in ISKCON with our own curriculum, everything else accredited. You know? And so they have so much land that Krishna gave them across the main street, which we'll see. They got 2 acres, which is big enough for a 60-unit apartment complex. The little duplex, little two-story townhouse type places, and individual houses that devotees have. I counted it up. When those are all built right now, with the current lots they have, there'll be 29 different houses and stuff. And what do you need, you know, a big garden for, when it's just a 5-minute walk to the temple, and you've got a beautiful big garden space there to play, and a playground, and, you know. And then across the street, you can live in the apartment complex and just walk across the street with your friend to take your kid to the primary school in the morning, you know. And so it's just really... like an ISKCON community, like a village. It really is an ISKCON village, you know. And Brahmananda said, his father said it'll happen in the future, and he couldn't imagine it. So when they bought this place, if you look in the picture on the right-hand side, there's one little section there I'm marking with the arrow now. That was the pretty much entire original temple church. And now it just got turned into one little section of the entire building like that. Yeah. And then they acquired the Garanga Hall, which is where we're looking from. It was a big sign shop, 3 stories tall, and they just gutted it, kept it for a wedding hall, prasadam area, theater, and put in classrooms on the second level. Yeah. And in between was this one family had the lot in between. And of course, it doesn't take any brain at all to figure out the Hare Krishnas want your property. So they kept asking like this outrageous price, you know. But they didn't realize they were dealing with Patels like that. And I would say to this day, you know, even though every single GBC in the world told them to do it, the Patels, the Gujaratis, the devotees there just could not, you know, pay an outrageous price for a piece of property. So finally, after 5 years of people in the middle realized what they were dealing with, and they sold out. So now it's these 3 continuous lots. Then after the Garanga Hall, they bought the next one, and now it's a parking lot. And holds about 70, 80 vehicles. Okay, let's go ahead. So here's the view of the temple now from the main street I was talking about. So it's, I guess called 34th Street. And it's four lanes divided. And we're standing on the place where the 60-unit apartment complex is going to come up. And this is when the temple was being constructed, before the trees got put in and stuff. So it still looks a little barren. To the right in the background is the YMCA, which is a big place, you know. And we're just waiting until they want to put a gate in the fence, because they're healthy guys, and so they have a healthy restaurant there. And, you know, our guys are already going over and signed up in the YMCA for athletic purposes. So they're calling it the Young Man's Chaitanya Association. Yeah. Here's another view of the temple, a little closer. And you can see there's no front door, no windows yet. Yeah. It's so beautiful, gold domes and everything else. You see there's a kind of pyramid. The small pyramid in the front is the lobby. The second pyramid behind that is a bigger assembly hall. And the big dome in the back is the actual temple room. On the right will be a restaurant. Here's one more picture with a few more plants growing. Okay. Now we're looking back at the opposite direction. This is the Garanga Hall. Again, without landscaping. And a very nice, beautiful place for all their assembly areas. Now we're inside the temple room during construction. In front of you is the altar. It weighs, I think, 5 to 7 tons. Nandalal came from a town in South India where they had a whole tradition of building these things, altars and stuff. So his brother almost stopped working for like 4 years to manage the construction of the thing. He took 1/3 of his income for 4 years to pay for it. It weighs about 7 tons, and they said they didn't even make altars that big in India anymore. So it's totally intricately carved, beautiful, you know, teak or mahogany or whatever it is. On the left and right, you can see the spaces with the cables coming in, where they have a big screen projection, so you can project anything you want to there for classes. Up on top, you can see the big squares, and that's where they have just lila pictures, one after another. And little portals on the top for smaller lights. Way in the very top, then, you see the octagon, which forms the basis of the inside of the dome. And what we see, of course, is just the first part, but it goes up like that, cascading inwards, until finally it's a three-story, ascension inside like that. And all the floors were marble, all the walls were marble. Here's a closer picture of the altar then, and putting the marble in just the right place. And you can see the details on the altar here. And here are two guys working up in the domes, you know, putting the lighting systems in and painting and everything else like that. Okay, Jai, Shishi Radhanila Madhava Kidai. And here's the actual picture with the deities installed. On the left are going to tie deities that were on Tamal Krishna Maharaj's Radhadamodar buses, and the right's big Govardhan Shila, 30-pound Govardhan Shila, more than that, I think, actually. Yeah. Bhakti Bringa Maharaj brought him. And Radhanila Madhava, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, saw them in a dream. Oh, yeah. Yeah, here's a close up. And you see on the left and the right, they have two flower elephants. They had some kind of basic structure, and they glued on all these little bachelor button flowers. And then Radharani and Krishna all dressed up like that. Yeah. Other dresses were more opulent than this throughout the festival. And of course, they're so beautiful, so personal. Yeah. A little closer picture. Krishna looks very happy. Radharani looks like she's giving blessings, and she's shy. And this is on the old altar, really. We have garlands up here. Looks like green or red, green and maybe lemons and apples or something, oranges and apples. So many garlands, you know, big things hanging around the roof. We were going to the airport, and Hari Lila was pointing out another property down the street which belongs to the temple. And the devotees were saying, another one? And he was laughing and saying, he said, Houston Temple is rich. Dr. Dingus or somebody, he had some property he'd bought, lots of it. He was a dentist, the piece across the street, everything. This is the way I heard the story, probably not completely true. And then he sold it to the temple for $1,000, all this, you know, property. And then he had a sales contract to buy it back for, you know, $800 or something like that, or $1,200. And so he wasn't paying any property taxes on it because it belonged to a church. So the, accountant said this and that. Well, it's technically legal, but it's really like shady. And if you get down to it, it's actually even like abusing your nonprofit right, everything else, you know. So the devotee said, okay, we won't do it again. You know? So then Dr. Dingus died, and he had no children, and there was no inheritance clause in the sales contract. So the devotees tried to give it to his nephews, and they couldn't do it. You know? So suddenly they acquired $3.2 million worth of property, you know, from the sunshine or from the universal form. Here's a picture of Giriraj. Yeah, Govardhan Shila. Bhakti Bringamar says that Giriraj is the king of funk. As far every day, if you look at the picture, is beautiful little paintings on his face of stars and flowers, everything else. Those are painted every day. Every day, and Nilamadav is painted every day. So not just money, it's real personal devotion to the deities and the deity worship. And here's a picture of what he's doing, the Govardhan Puja, like that. And of course, many there from the very beginning with Radha Damodar and the foundation of the temple, like that. How can you not go to the spiritual world living like that your whole life, serving? Okay, now here's a picture of the temple room looking backwards. And Kirtan, this is actually during initiations. Right in the front foreground is Giriraj Maharaj. He was initiating all the boys on the ground there. And many of these are children of devotees. And they've grown up. And of course, they grew up in ISKCON. And here they finally decided we've got to make the plunge. We've got to stop being, Dinabandhus. What do we call it? Yeah, Brahmabandhus. We've got to stop being Guru Kulis and Brahmabandhus. And we've got to really be, you know, committed devotees. You know, so they were taking names. And the whole community was there. It was unbelievable. In the background, then you see this wall. This is accordion doors, very beautiful, high quality, and they just turn sideways and slide off to the side, and then you get your entire temple room in. So here's a picture of the entire temple room from the altar, and now you can see how far back it goes and how many people it holds, like that. And up above, you can see these beautiful, big size pictures of Parampara and Leela. And Prabhupada over there sitting and looking at everything. Yeah, I know devotees who are architects and everything else, and they were just in apoplexy about the losses that were being made, the mistakes that were being made, and everything else like that. You know? But it's a devotional project. A lot of false egos, expensive false egos, had to be straightened out. You know? This then is a picture of the Pujari room. Maybe like half of it. And if you can see it, it's this row after row after row after of glass cabinets and jewelry spaces. What, maybe like 40 feet long? Four rows like this. You know, Nilamadava has more clothes than you do. And here's some pictures I found on the internet. On the left, the big picture is Sarvabhauma. Some people may know. He was a Sankirtan devotee from the beginning of time. Now he's had knee replacement. and his wife up there, Mother Guru Bhakti, she's a doctor. And she's in charge of outreach, does so many programs with the different universities and cultural programs. And down below is Advaita Chandra, who is leader of the Bhakta Briksha program. We have 5 Bhakta Briksha programs around there to organize all this. And here's the prasadam distribution. They closed the parking lot down. They had 3 buses shuttling from a shopping mall they got a contract with. Big buses just coming and loading people. And they had a big stage, and you know, Bhakti Bringamars did like a 4-hour kirtan, and so many big groups came and did very impressive, you know, cultural programs. And a lot of new people came, so many new people, neighbors and people just going driving by, and people coming from the media. I would say they did not have a professional media person there. Some people had some experience, but they really hired an advertising agency. They could have got a lot more people because other people know what they're doing. So, but still, they distributed 3,000 plates of prasadam. And finally, a picture of Srila Prabhupada Jai sitting on like a Vaikuntha Vyasa-san, whatever it is. Okay. So, thank you very much. So, Prabhupada Ki Jai. Any final questions or comments?
Thank you.
Wonderful, Maharaj. That was wonderful. Very enlivening.
Yeah. So we're expecting the same thing in Hawaii. No excuse. Of course, this is Texas. God created the universe in 6 days, and the 7th day he rested. On the 8th day he created Texas. If I die, I may not go to heaven, because I don't know if they let cowboys in. But if I don't, I want to go to Texas, because this is as close as I have ever been.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So, as Tamal Krishnamurti fit right in there. I mean, he had one aspect of his character. He's like a real, he comes from an aristocratic family. So, it's still so many old money still controls so much there, you know. And so, he dealt with them like that, you know. And he demanded that they be aristocratic and lead the people and take care of you can be aristocratic, you can help it, take care of all the money, but you have to take care of the Mexicans. Okay. Yes, sir, we know. You've got to take care of the Mexicans. So it's a whole, every atmosphere has its own preaching character. Texas is a circus. There's a railroad that goes right behind there. There's this loud roaring, you know. So I keep telling them the next thing in a few years is going to be a stop there. And twice a day, the Radharani Express will go up and down Houston, like picking up people and dropping them off, and little meal them out of the station with the Radharani Express stopping there. Yeah. I guess this is what happens in Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha is an amusement park which is always expanding. Disneyland.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Yeah. I was getting, the reason I was squeezing it in here is at the last minute I was trying to finish off some little brochures because we have 11 devotees leaving from here for the Sadhu Sangha. There's 24 devotees I know going from Houston, and I forgot how many more, but there's going to be about 3,000 devotees at this Sadhu Sangha retreat for the weekend.
Wow.
And I'm not going. I'm going to be here all alone in the house, but the last minutes were panicked beyond belief to get everybody off like that. So the ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada's ISKCON, is for a movement that's been dying for 30 years, it's doing pretty well. Prabhu, ISKCON's dead, Prabhu. I've heard this, it's been dying for so long. You know. But anyway, hope it doesn't start to stink like your mouse.
It came back to life, 30% left. All right, thank you, Maharaj.
So I'll see you all in cyberspace.
Bye.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Jai,
thank you, Maharaj. Jai.
Hare Bo.
Hare Bo.